Well, we're in a message series called Believe, because it does matter what you believe. And the theme for today is called single-mindedness. And I think you'll find this topic relevant. In fact, I think you'll find it annoyingly relevant. I've titled the message Uncluttered. Now, here's the key question in our Believe series today. The key question is, how do I keep my focus on Jesus amidst distractions? And the key idea is, I focus on God and His priorities for my life. And our key verse is this: but seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. All these things, all what things? Everything you really need. God says, you pay attention to me first, and I'm not going to forget you. I'm a good, good father, and I pay attention to what you need. Stephen Covey, in partnering with Roger and Rebecca Merrill, in their book, First Things First, asked this penetrating question: what is the one activity that you know, if you did superbly well and consistently, it would have positive results in your personal life? What's that one activity? Some of you remember the movie City Slickers, where the Billy Crystal character, Mitch, is floundering through life. He goes and he visits a dude ranch, and he meets a real true-to-life cowboy by the name of Curly. And one day they have this conversation. Curly says, you want to know what the secret to life is? This is the secret to life, right here. And Mitch says, your finger is the secret to life? No, one thing, just one thing. You stick to that one thing, and the rest doesn't mean a thing, just one thing. Mitch says, but what is the one thing? And Curly says, that's what you have to find out. Jesus came along and he said, without apology and with great enthusiasm, I am that one thing. And if you doubt that, let me ask you, what do you think it is? If Jesus is not the one thing that makes sense and is worthy of your undivided devotion, then what is that one thing? Well, you have much competing for your attention. For those of you who take notes, which is virtually 100% of you, I know all of you do, you're going to look at your outline today, and as I'm going through this message, you're going to be thinking, oh my goodness, Ronnie's not even to point one. It's going to be a 50-minute sermon. No, I'm going to walk you through a little story, a little narrative. And basically, your outline is going to be just a few summary thoughts from that narrative, okay? The story is out of Luke chapter 10, and it's a scene from verses 38 through 42. And it's where Jesus and his entourage, his small circle, they're having dinner at the home of Martha and Mary and Lazarus. This is Martha and Mary were sisters. Lazarus was their brother, and they're going to host a little dinner party for Jesus and his small group. And you would think, well, how hard is that? Well, it creates something of a drama. So here we go, Luke 10, starting verse 38. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to them. The little village is Bethany. It's about 2 miles outside of Jerusalem. And if you're thinking of where Jerusalem is, Bethany is, Bethlehem, Sugarland would be Jerusalem, Richmond would be Bethany, Rosenberg would be Bethlehem. And so Bethany is just a little small suburb outside of Jerusalem. And this is where Martha and Mary live, along with their brother Lazarus. So they stop here. Martha opens her home. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. Now, that's not just a geographical, physical description that, you know, she's sitting at the Lord's feet. Actually, Mary might have been over in the corner. This is an idiomatic expression. When you sit at the feet of someone, it means I am sitting under that person's authority. I am inviting their authority, their tutelage over my life. And when it says that Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus, she is intentionally focusing and surrendering and listening and welcoming what Jesus has to say into her life. That's what Mary is doing. You know, you'll see this phrase elsewhere in the New Testament. For example, when it says that the Lord will put everything under the feet of Jesus, it means he stands over it all. When the New Testament talks about giving in the early church, what would the people do? They would bring their tithes and offerings, and they would place it where? It was said, at the apostles' feet, literally at their feet. They're basically saying, here, this is under your authority. I give this with no strings. I place it under your feet. Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus. That's what she's doing. And what's Martha doing? Martha is busy, busy, busy. And listen, there's nothing wrong with being busy. Everybody got that? Nothing wrong with good service. Nothing wrong with good acts of service. Jesus himself taught what? The parable of the Good Samaritan. You find a need, you meet it. We all know about gifts of hospitality. That's a wonderful thing. And in this story, Jesus is not going to rain on Martha and her willingness to serve. But how many of you know that good service with a bad attitude is bad service? Good service with a sour spirit is bad service. And Martha is busy, 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 but you're going to find also that she's just irritable in this. Here's the way I would describe Martha in the story. Martha loves you, and she has a wonderful plan for your life. That's Martha. And in this story, she's going to get really frustrated with everybody who doesn't sign up for her cause, for her program. Listen, I've got my plan. I've got my program. This is the way it needs to go, and you're not getting on board. You're incompetent. You're uncooperative. Therefore, well, let's read the story. We'll continue on. Verse 40, but Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. Distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to Jesus and she said, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Not only is Martha frustrated at Mary, she's frustrated at Jesus. What did I do? Jesus, don't you even care that my sister's not helping me? Tell her to help me. And here's what Jesus says. Martha, Martha, you're worried and upset about many things. Now, when you see a word repeated, Martha, Martha, it's a sign of emotion. Jesus loves Martha. Jesus respects Martha. She's a doer. She's a leader. She takes initiative. He loves Martha. But he also senses that right now what's going on in her spirit's not a good thing. And he says, Martha, Martha. Now, I want you to think of other times in the Bible where a word gets repeated twice. You remember Jesus praying over Jerusalem? And he loves Jerusalem. And what does he say? Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem. When Jesus was on the cross, my God, my God. When David was lamenting over his son Absalom, oh, Absalom, Absalom, my son, my son. It's a sign of intense emotion. Jesus says, Martha, Martha, you're worried and upset over many things. Now, all of you who know me, know my family, you know that my wife's name is Martha. If you're new here or you're watching us online, and we love our online viewership, welcome. But you may not know this, but my wife's name is Martha. And she has a twin sister by the name of Mary, and they have a brother by the name of Lazarus, which is, you know, I'm kidding about the Lazarus part, but Martha has a twin sister by the name of Mary. And over the years, people have asked, well, Martha, did it bother you? Did it bug you that your name Martha and your twin sister got the Mary name? But Martha says, absolutely not, because I was named for my Aunt Martha. And my Aunt Martha and our family, she was a rock star. Everybody adored my Aunt Martha. She was an incredible woman. She was a beautiful woman. She was gracious. She was sharp. And all through the years, when she would see me, she would take me aside and she would say, you know, you're my namesake. Here's a little cash. Martha always appreciated her Aunt Martha. And so when her Martha's parents found out that instead of having one girl, that now they're going to have twins, they had to come up with another name. And so obviously another name that goes with Martha is Mary. Now, having said all that, I would be less than honest and less than forthright if I did not confess to you that of all the Bible passages and scriptures I have quoted to my wife over the years, this one would rank right up there at, you know, close to the top of the list. Martha, Martha, you're worried and upset over many things. And when I start to quote it, she, you know, don't even go there, you know. Jesus loves Martha, and he knows she's distracted, she's torn. You know, listen, you just have so much time, you just have so much money, you just have so much capacity to care. Now, in heaven, you'll have unlimited capacity to care. Right now, you just have so much capacity to care. And if you spend all your time caring over things that don't matter or matter less, then you're not going to have any caring capacity left over to care about the most important things in life. Martha, Martha, you're worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. And Bible students for years have wrestled with, is Jesus here speaking about physical things, food, or is he talking about something spiritual? Actually, I think he's talking about both. I think when he says, Martha, Martha, you're worried and upset over many things, actually, only few things are needed. In other words, Martha, you're unnecessarily complicating tonight. We don't need gourmet. We don't need you knocking yourself out. All we need is soup and sandwich. We'd love a 7-course meal, but we'd rather have a soup and sandwich with a good attitude than a 7-course meal with a sour attitude. Now, let me say to you, this is not an admonition to be lazy. And if you can set aside a night to have a wonderful 7-course meal with a beautiful spirit, invite me, and I would love to be there with you and share that with you. But I would also, we can all be real happy with a soup and sandwich with a wonderful spirit and attitude. Martha, you don't need to make this unnecessarily complicated. Only a few things are needed. Indeed, only one, and now I believe he's talking spiritually. The one thing, Martha, that's really needed is for you to do what Mary's doing, which is turn your heart towards me. The most important thing, Martha, is that you might give me your loyalty, your attention, that you would sit at my feet too. And if that's not the one thing, you tell me what can be the one thing that gives your life meaning and purpose. There's the story. It's a story about, well, some of you have heard the phrase, anything worth doing is worth doing with 110%. Jesus would say some things are worth doing simply, more simply. And only one thing is really needed. So, Let's make a few summary observations. Number one, could anything be more important than giving Jesus our undivided loyalty and honor? Back in the early days of this church, back when we were meeting over at Clements High School, our whole church, when our small groups that would meet in the hallways at Clements High School, we were going through a little book called Discipling the Multiplying Ministry, written by Milton Jones. I've never forgot something in that book. He talked about terminal thinking versus connected, or what he called relational thinking. He said there are some people who they compartmentalize their life and their thinking is terminal. In other words, I think about my work life, I think about my family life, I think about my financial life, I think about my social life, I think about my church life, my spiritual life, but it's terminal thinking. It's not connected. It's not interwoven. And when they think about, you know, single-minded devotion to Jesus, they think, well, that's just so impractical. You got to go to work. You got to have friendships. You got to have a family. You got to raise children. No. When you think in a connected way, what does it mean to be single-minded for Christ? It means you want Christ to be honored in all of those categories in your life. There's no area of my life where I don't want Christ to be honored. I want Him to be honored, yes, in my spiritual life. I want Him to be honored in my marriage. I want Him to be honored in my vocation. I want Him to be honored with my finances. I want Him to be honored in the way I raise my children. There's no area of my life where I don't want to be at the feet of Jesus and where I don't want the blessing of His Lordship and Saviorhood. Second thing I would say is this. There are two big steps in simplifying our lives. Number one, identify what's most important to you. And step two, eliminate as much of everything else as you can as is reasonably possible. In other words, sometimes it's important to learn how to say no and not just yes. Let me put a chart up here on the screen. Some of you have seen charts sort of like this, but this is a good simple version that I really appreciate. It's a vertical continuum with three categories. And here's the bottom category. It says under-challenged. The middle category says appropriately challenged. The top category says over-challenged. And I constantly have to take a look at my life. Where am I? Am I under-challenged? Appropriately challenged? Over-challenged. Here's what happens when you're under-challenged if you're not careful. Atrophy sets in. You think, well, I'd like to be sort of under-challenged. Be careful that atrophy doesn't set in. The middle part, appropriately challenged. You think, well, that's sort of where I want to be. I think that's where I function well. Well, let's come back to that. And then over-challenged. For some of us, you're up here in the upper level of being over-challenged, and that's the danger zone. Listen, you can be in that danger zone for a short period of time. We've all been there. We all know what it's like. Sweetie, I'm sorry, but right now, for the next couple of weeks, for the next month, for this season, I've got more on my plate than I can possibly do. I understand that. I'm not going to be here long, but you can be in that dangerously over-challenged area for a bit, but if you stay there too long, how long's too long? I don't know. You'll have to answer that question. Something's going to break and something's going to snap. But many people say where you do your best work and where your best energy is tapped into is at this line between appropriately challenged and over-challenged, in fact, just slightly above. This is where, okay, I gotta stay on my toes. I'm being pushed, need to think, have to prioritize things, and, the juices are flowing here. I'm not just kind of lazily floating through. And so I would ask you to take a look at your life You don't want atrophy to set in spiritually. You don't want to be dangerously over-challenged. But take a look at, you know, your life, your calendar, what you're called to be. And I would encourage you to identify what's most important and eliminate as much fluff as you reasonably can. And the last thing here, and just taking a few notes, key application, what difference does all of this make in the way we live? First of all, we set plans as believers informed by God's agenda and will. We're not looking just to be busy and active, but Lord, what might you have me do? Secondly, we don't ask God to bless our plan, but to bless my alignment to his plan. God, show me in this season of my life what you might have for me. Your will be done in my life as it is in heaven. I'm not asking you just to bless what I want to do. I'm asking you to help me be in alignment, maybe with your direction for my life. And last of all, we trust God to meet our needs and our desires. Jesus said, you seek first the kingdom of God, and you can know that he will add unto you exactly what you need. Why? Because he is a good, good father. Let me remind you of the most basic definition of prayer. Prayer is this: Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. When we have that mindset, we're acknowledging our helplessness. But if we stay there, that's not very inspiring. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Yes, I'm helpless, but get this, but also I'm open. I'm open to what you may do. Yes, I'm helpless, but you're not. I may be between a rock and a hard place, but you're not. I might be in over my head, but you're not. I might feel like things are crazy, but they're not with you. Yes, I'm helpless, but you're not, and I'm open, God, to see what you might bring about. Therefore, into your hands I commit this person, this circumstance, this event, this season, and I'm open to see what you, my good, good Father, might bring about. So, what's your one thing? Do you need to pay attention to simplifying your life in some way? Have you been trying to carry too much rather than taking what's on your plate and turning some of those concerns and anxieties into a prayer list and say, Lord, rather than me carrying all this in my own energy, I'm going to take this, this, and this, and into your hands I commit this, and I'm open. And actually, I'm excited to see what you might bring about.